You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. Credit card companies were on Capitol Hill yesterday facing questions over charges of unfair business practices, from late fees to high interest rates. We will talk about what was griped about on Capitol Hill yesterday. Credit card consumers who feel they were ripped off also testified. And we'll talk with a guest who says that big plastic has pulled the wool over all of our eyes. And we will welcome your thoughts and questions about this. Credit card debt, credit card practices that increase that debt. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. The Senate committee, headed up by Senator Carl Levin, took up this issue on Capitol Hill yesterday. Major credit card issuers and consumers who were hurt by the credit card company's practices testified. Carl Levin says that his panel has uncovered abusive practices, but they're legal. And Levin is, though, threatening possible legislation to outlaw them. He is hoping that the banking industry, the credit card industry, will make the changes voluntarily. We'll ask our guest if he thinks that's going to happen. And again, we welcome your thoughts and questions about this. One man testified yesterday. He said he owed $3,200 on his credit card with interest and fees. That debt grew to more than $10,700. The Ohio man told the story to the Senate panel looking into what it says are confusing billing practices and shifting interest rates on credit cards. Bank officials, though, defended their policies as responsible and well-suited to the needs of consumers. Officials from Citigroup and Chase Bank USA say they are eliminating some practices. One includes the one that hit the Ohio man with over-limit fees on his account 47 times, even though the Ohio man went over his credit limit only 3 times. We will talk more about this. Chase credit card company apologized to this Ohio man, saying, in this case, we simply blew it. Our guest is Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. He is featured in the new documentary, In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. His website is creditcardnation.com, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Well, it's a pleasure to be joining with you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for being with us. So it says here you think that big plastic is pulling the wool over all of our eyes. How is that?
Well, you know, it's extraordinary to think that in just a short period of time since 1996, when the Supreme Court raised the essentially denied states the ability to regulate interest rate and fee caps, that the cost of over-limit and other penalty fees has gone from $1.3 to $14 billion, and that money essentially has been used to by the banking industry to create a structure, a pattern of policies, and a whole insulated environment where essentially there is no longer any regulation. What's called federal preemption is the legal terminology by which nationally chartered banks can only be regulated by Congress. And therefore, all you have to do is control a very small number of members of Congress, let's say 35 members on the House Financial Services Committee, and you never have to worry about being regulated again. It's an extraordinary transformation that what used to be a pattern and a set of practices by bankers, which saw themselves as honorable members of the community, and that there was a degree of respect, and that regulation was only necessary in extraordinary circumstances, such as most of the regulation that's been changed emerged during the Great Depression. Yet today what we see is that the laws are changed on behalf of the banks themselves, and that they pursue policies that they know are illegal, if not unethical, and they wait until they can effectively lobby to have those laws changed on their behalf. So from the point of view of consumers today, essentially the system has been changed where the credit card industry is essentially protected by members of Congress. It's essentially a racket, and that we are paying for it through the extraordinary profitability of this industry, which subsidizes many other avarice and egregious policies by the deregulated financial services industry.
Well, Carl Levin, the chair of this committee that held the hearing yesterday, says that these outrageous or abusive practices are legal, and he might introduce legislation to outlaw them, but he's hoping that the industry will make the changes by itself voluntarily. Do you think that's going to happen?
Well, number one, Senator Levin, and this was the Senate Investigative Committee, he was responsible for the General Accountability Office report, which I contributed to last spring, which investigated credit card industry policies. I testified in January at the Senate Banking Committee addressing similar policies by the credit card industry. And these hearings only occurred because the Democrats have gained control of the Senate, and the senators know that they don't have enough votes to get any bills passed. So the reason they're hoping for voluntary response from the industry is that essentially, as we show in our movie, that it doesn't take many members of Congress that are controlled by the lobbying power of the big banks to stop any form of major regulation. And the banks are also trying to respond because their biggest concern is the return to a federal usury law. There is no such thing as usury in America today by nationally chartered banks. And so this is simply a way to try to get Congress off their banks and say, leave us alone, the market works.
Did you say get Congress off their banks?
Well, we've had enough visa gate problems already. Certainly members of Congress aren't exactly the best users of their credit cards either.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this one case that's gotten this Ohio man that testified yesterday before the committee and was the focus of a number of news reports. What's his name? Wanamaker. He said that he had $3,200 in in credit on his credit card. And I think he missed a payment or two, and it just started piling up, and his debt grew to more than $10,700. Is that a unique story?
I think what's important about his story is that the industry recognizes and has perfected every single practice and policy that was responsible for contributing to this enormous increase in penalty fees. And you have to keep in mind that the credit card industry is an extraordinarily peculiar entity in that 40% of the people that use credit cards and pay them off at the end of the month essentially get a free loan, which means the other 60% of Americans are paying for their cost of credit as well as the people who actually could afford to pay for it. And so 20% of the account holders in the U.S. account for approximately 70% of the profits. And so what the banks have learned is they've essentially have created a form of an administrative beating. They push consumers and pummel them enough to get the maximum fees, but they can't push them to the edge where they essentially force them into bankruptcy. And so this is what we're seeing more and more today, is to force, with these policies, force consumers to think that they're doing something wrong, that therefore they deserve paying these extraordinary amount of fees. And this would never have occurred 20 years ago. And in fact, just as an example, it used to be that the grace period was not only the date that your payment was due, but you would get an extra 3 to 5 days just in case the mail ran late. Today, your statement might say that your check has to be received by 1 o'clock in the afternoon because they know that the mail doesn't even arrive until 3 o'clock.
You know, and the other thing I didn't realize that was talked about in this hearing, you can, let's say you're late on a payment. Let's say you pay $500 or something of your $550 bill. You'll get a finance charge on the entire amount rather than the smaller balance left.
Well,
does that make sense?
That's another issue, that there's so many changes in what used to be the computation of simple interest. Now there's average interest rate over the total period of time that you're for that particular month. There's residual billing systems where even if you've paid off your credit card for the prior month, now you have to have it paid off for 60 consecutive days to get an extra couple of months of interest from people. The industry has created so many new ways by which people think they have honored the terms of their contract and paid off their loan, and they find out that they're still going to have to pay interest on another half month, month, or maybe 2 months, even when they no longer carry a balance. And it's, again, these kinds of tricks and explicit policies that the banks claim are legal, and the only reason they're legal is because consumers do not have options to fight back. They can't turn to their state attorney generals because these are nationally chartered banks and can only be regulated by Congress. They're being forced into terms of contracts like binding arbitration. And, of course, tort reform, which President Bush pushed so hard last year, was specifically designed for situations like this, where an individual consumer may find themselves a few hundred dollars at risk by these predatory practices, but they can't afford a lawyer and it's not worth it. But with a class action lawsuit, they could get thousands of people involved, and of course that would underwrite multi-million dollar lawsuits. So there are just very, very few options for consumers to fight back, especially when Congress isn't receptive to going after the banks and demanding fair and responsible policies.
This was years and years ago. I wrote out a check to pay off my credit card balance on a particular month. Let's say it was $100.59. I wrote out the check just mistakenly for $100. I didn't do the 59 cents, and I got walloped with some sort of late fee or service fee for that mistake.
Well, I actually wrote a check this year where I was missing 1 cent, mm-hmm. and I wanted to see what would happen by the credit card industry. And sure enough, they levied a $35 late fee, and they threatened a variety of other fees. And I finally worked my way through the system, and I said, you realize this is 1 cent that you are creating, ultimately, thousands of APR in terms of percentage charge on this particular account. And eventually I got to a service person who was really embarrassed by the situation.
We are talking with Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. He's also featured in a new documentary, In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. We're talking about credit card companies and credit card company practices that hurt consumers, the subject of a Senate hearing yesterday. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your problems and proposed solutions. Critics say that the complex billing and interest rate practices of credit card companies are in some cases pushing Americans even deeper into debt. Some say they are unfair and abusive practices, and some congresspeople want the credit card industry, the banking industry, to make some changes voluntarily. Otherwise, there could be some legislation to outlaw some of these practices. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 24 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Thursday, March the 8th. Coming up this afternoon, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. After 5, Ben will talk with an opponent of a suit before the U.S. Supreme Court. The Freedom From Religion Foundation brought its case before the U.S. Supreme Court on government-sponsored faith-based programs. Ben talked with a guest from Freedom From Religion last week, and today he will get the other side of the story. We're talking about credit card practices, from late fees to high interest rates. Credit card companies were on Capitol Hill yesterday facing some questioning over whether their practices were unfair to consumers. We're talking about the issue with Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation. Got lots of callers who want to weigh in on this one, including an emailer, Karen in Darlington, who says, I have noticed that my credit card company has cut short the billing period to 20 days, meaning I have almost no time to pay the bill. And the worst part is there was no notice given for this. Another common problem, Robert Manning?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, the whole nature of the relationship between the banks is to encourage you to assume higher levels of debt that you can afford to repay. I mean, one of the major changes about the deregulation of this industry is that in the past, the best customer was somebody who could repay their loans. Today, the best customer is somebody who can never repay their loans. And so, given the profitability of the credit card industry, and it is the most profitable sector of the banking industry, what they're looking for now, particularly with rising interest rates now since the lowest interest rates in history have essentially passed, is to squeeze people with more and more fees. In fact, there are even credit cards that are marketed today where there are no days for a grace period, which means that even when you pay off your credit card statement at the end of the month, every month, you will always incur a interest rate.
Yep. So, Robert Manning, if you were writing the legislation, what would you be writing?
Well, I've certainly tried, and we've certainly made a lot of proposals. I think, first, what's really important is that consumers need to understand what are the rules in the game that they're playing with. In the last 20 years, the length of a contract that you sign for a credit card company has gone from 5 pages to over 35 pages, and they're written by what we call risk-averse lawyers, which means there's no way you can possibly understand these contracts.
Yeah, in fact, I saw some coverage of a news organization brought the language explaining the terms of the credit card company to some college campus, some business graduate school, and nobody could figure out what was being said in those contracts.
That's exactly the purpose, because then the response is, well, the consumer had the contract. They should know what the terms are. And I can assure you that if you had asked the presidents of those credit card companies to read their credit card contracts, they certainly couldn't explain them. So what we really need to have is a degree of transparency where consumers understand what it is that the rules of the game have so fundamentally changed against them. I think cost of fees is going to be the big one. I think we'll see $50 fees soon if we can't get Congress to put pressure on them. Binding arbitration is certainly the biggest issue. It's the only thing that concerns the credit card industry in terms of changing their policies is what the trial lawyers that bring class action lawsuits that can get thousands of consumers on board and essentially afford multi-million dollar lawsuits to challenge these policies. I'm actually involved with two right now, one of them which is challenging late fees as punitive fees following the State Farm Supreme Court decision in the Katrina hurricane insurance settlement cases. The other one is simply the nature of customer service today and the nature of explaining these rules where they say that your interest rate has been raised from 3.9. In my case, it actually got raised to 32.24%.
Yikes.
And I presented this at the Senate Banking Committee hearing, and I said, look, I have absolutely no idea. I've never missed a payment before. I don't even know if I got the payment over the Christmas holidays. And nobody can explain to me why the interest rate was raised ninefold. And what is the criteria for consumers to lower their interest rate? How do they arbitrarily pick 5 months before they're going to decide whether to reevaluate your account? Does the consumer know that when they get a fixed rate term on their contract that there is no such thing as a fixed rate anymore? And if the interest rates go up, I think that the credit card companies should be mandated to say how much your interest rate will go up under some circumstances. But as it is today, essentially the industry operates like a black box, and you have to accept the terms because they're, quote, legal. And for those 20% of Americans that are behind on their credit cards as well as many of their bills, they see no other recourse but to accept these terms, and we get these extraordinary situations where a $32 set of charges can lead to over $10,000 with late fees and penalties.
To the phones and Bill in Oshkosh. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, Bill, go ahead.
Yes, there are two things that trouble me about this whole industry, aside from the major impact upon people that aren't maybe so financially sophisticated. I worked on Wall Street for 4.5 years, and I think there's an influential way of getting at some sort of a proposal to regulate these things. That is, in banking, there's the London LIBOR, London Interbanking, blah, blah, rate. and there's also a prime rate here. And these are set, and banks do charge more for less creditworthy customers, it's true. But there's a collar of what's reasonable. I mean, we were taught in credit control with corporations that charging a high interest rate will never get your principal back. And I think that, you know, a fair assessment of creditors' cash flow, you could use that to document whether the interest rate is punitive or not. And I think we could use the major commercial banks and what they're charging, if they're not engaged in this predatory practice, what they're charging for personal loans, and you could establish that and set a collar that credit card companies could not charge more than a reasonable premium on that, and you could determine this collar by the market fluctuations, and you could track it the same way that prime is tracked. And I think that would be a very fair playing field for most of the industry, and you could it would be public, and you could certainly track the behavior with minimal supervision over time.
Yeah, I'm one of those unsophisticated financial types because you lost me at the blah blah rate. Robert Manning, do you get all this?
Yeah, and it's a good point. Many of us have tried to propose what we've called a soft rate, by which there would be a maximum that would reflect the cost of inflation and other externalities in terms of these pricing structures. And the really key thing is to keep in mind is there's this big myth that the industry creates that there's 6,000 credit card issuers out there. And the reality of it is the top 10 credit card companies control about 90% of the market. And the top 3 credit card companies control almost 60% of the market. I mean, we're really talking about what's become virtually a monopoly set of collusionary actors who are working together to have the highest possible prices and the consumer be damned. And this is a situation now where we know that consumer credit is now an integral part of people's lifestyles, and that as a result, this is one particularly protected industry that claims that it is responding to market forces, and yet the reality of it is it's so protected by Congress, and we can see it in terms of the new bankruptcy law, which essentially forces the public to subsidize the debt collection policies in many ways of the industry, that the interest rate is simply seen as one of many, many ways that they can increase the overall cost of credit for the average consumer who is so desperate for credit and so has such lack of financial savvy that they exceptionally accept these terms even when they can no longer afford them.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Bill. Louise in Wausau. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. I have a question, something that hasn't been touched on yet, is the membership fee to these things. And I recently had an experience. I lost my job. I had a very small balance, less than $120. And I couldn't pay the fee every month, and so I called them, and I told them the situation. And this card had been canceled, by the way, probably 8-9 months prior to this. And yet they were still charging me a membership fee every month. And so when I got into the predicament, I called and I said, why am I being charged? And this was a $25 a month membership fee.
I've never heard of that. That's not the annual fee that some cards will charge you.
No, it's just $25 a month membership fee. Okay? And I'm sorry, it was a month. And so when I called and I questioned, why am I still a member? Why am I paying a membership fee? I canceled. I'm not using your service anymore. And I kind of coagulated it with, like, if I was a Y member and canceled my membership, I don't have to pay a membership fee. And they told me that as long as you still have a balance, you're still a member, even though you can't use their facility, which is the credit card. So I was being charged this $25 a year membership fee. And so it was, I think it was like 8 months since I had canceled it, and I refused to pay a membership fee on something that I did not belong to, in essence. And went through a big rigmarole.
Yeah, and so what happened?
Well, finally, I couldn't pay because I lost my job. I was on unemployment, and I had to pay other essentials. And I absolutely refused, and I said, you're not going to get it from me. I don't care. You can keep charging me monthly. I don't care. You're never going to get it because I'm on unemployment. And I'm not a member. And I went all the way to, Oh, I think like two or three supervisors I went through. And they kept insisting that, yes, you are a member as long as you have a balance. So I'd like him to address this because I don't quite understand why you're a member of something when you have canceled your membership, so to speak.
Yeah, and it sounds like it hasn't been resolved, Louise. It's still out there. Yeah. All right. Robert Manning?
Well, again, these are the devil's in the detail of these contracts, and most of these contracts will say that for the first 60 days, if you have not terminated your agreement, that you're obligated for the membership fee for the entire 12 months. And that's why they essentially require that you pay the membership fee at the beginning, the whole $25, rather than, say, $2 a month.
Yeah, that's what I'm. There's not a $25 a month membership fee for a card, is there?
No. Yeah. That would be for one annual fee.
Yeah. Louise, good luck to you. Richard in Madison. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Basically, I have a couple cards, and I pay them off every month. And I try to meet their requirement of getting a check in the mail to them 7 days ahead of the due date. Invariably, I get a late charge. My payment, even though mailed 7 days ahead of time, is 1 day late.
Yeah, isn't that convenient?
And so I call them up on the phone, and I invariably talk to a young man in Delhi, India, and I tell them the situation and that I refuse to pay the late charge, so just forget it. They finally, after talking, they finally acknowledge, okay, we're going to take the late charge off your bill. You won't have to pay that.
Yeah, is he lucky, Robert Manning?
Well, again, you know, there's been specific instances where the major credit card companies have had some of their contractors that process the checks essentially hold your mail until the due date so that you would be forced to pay a late fee. And this has been documented in the past. The industry always says that they're going to clean up their act and these issues won't happen. So essentially what they've done is reduce the grace period where you're now vulnerable to the U.S. Postal Service. And they know that at any given period of time, X number of consumers will incur a late fee. And they know that many people, especially if they have a debt, are already feeling a lot of other financial distress, and the last thing that they want to do is call up and complain to get that late fee waived. Again, this has become a $14 billion industry from the credit card companies, and it's rather ironic when you think about it that they're making so much more revenue, and yet their customer service facilities seem to continually decline. And again, that's part and parcel of the process where the harder it is for you to talk to somebody to discuss your situation and to really get redress for your personal situation means that it always benefits them that more and more late fees will be paid by consumers.
Yeah. Richard, thanks for sharing that story. I guess when I said, is he lucky, is that our credit card companies so quick to waive a late fee if a consumer says, hey, wait a minute, I mailed that with plenty of time to get there, I'm not paying it.
No, usually the late fee can be waived fairly easily the first or second time, and like I guess unless you're me, and I must have been flagged in that case with Citibank. But after that, the perception from the bank is this is a consumer that is in debt and has difficulty, and they don't have any other options. And so they're going to have to accept our terms as outrageous as they may be. And that's essentially the situation that we've come to with Congress today, where we see a $3,200 balance end up with over $10,000.
We're talking with Robert Manning. He's author of Credit Card Nation. We're talking about the credit card industry, the hearing on Capitol Hill yesterday when the Senate committee took testimony from consumers who feel they were ripped off by credit card companies and from the major credit card issuers themselves, talking about various practices that credit card companies use that critics say are pushing Americans even more into debt, deeper into debt. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Coming up after 9 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn's guest will detail the toll the war in Iraq has taken on American soldiers and their families. That's coming up after 9. Kathleen's guest, Martha Raddatz. She is a reporter for ABC News, and she has a book out on this. We're talking with the author of Credit Card Nation, Robert Manning, who is also featured in a new documentary, In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. You can read more about his book and the issue on creditcardnation.com. We're talking about late fees and high interest rates and other practices that credit card companies were on Capitol Hill yesterday facing questioning over whether their business practices were unfair to consumers. And our next caller is Keith in Madison. Hi, Keith. You're on the air.
Hi. I had an experience similar to the last caller where, I pay my statement off every month. I don't wait a week before the due date before I pay off the credit card. I send in a check as soon as I get my statement, but I still have problems. They'll slip on the late fee, and they think you won't notice it, but I always go over my statement very closely. But I wanted the guests to talk about the payment protection plan, because they'll send a check with your statement. If you endorse the check, then you'll be on this payment protection plan. I think it's ridiculous that I'd want to be on it since I pay off my credit card every month. Another thing, too, is the rewards program. That's kind of convoluted. They'll make you think that you're eligible for these rewards because you've accumulated these points, and then you'll send in something saying that you wanted these rewards, you know, magazines or whatever. Then the next statement you get, you'll get all these charges for these magazines. I wanted to know if people have had similar experiences to that.
Mm-hmm. Robert Manning?
Well, you know, there's a couple of the key issues here, and ultimately it's the responsibility and responsiveness of the credit card companies when, you know, you've entered into a contract. And anybody who understands contract knows it takes two actors, and the consumer who's entered into this contract has accepted the terms that they faithfully think they understand, and the lender in this case is supposed to respond accordingly. And what's happened essentially is that the credit card companies, at will and at their whim, that profits them the most, have created a set of contracts that Congress has permitted them to disseminate that allows them to change the terms at any time that they want. And that's ultimately the real problem here. And so when a consumer in good faith is sending in their payment, and now it doesn't matter that they've reduced the grace period, knowing that there's going to be more people that are going to have difficulty getting their payments processed in time. Again, they've created it where it's the consumer who's the fault here instead of the consumer that's the victim. The insurance product program that the caller refers to, this is one of the biggest ripoffs right now in America, that these are technically not insurance programs. They call them emergency benefit programs. Because if they are insurance programs, they would come under the supervision of your state insurance regulator. And as a result, they could not justify the cost of these programs versus the very few benefits that they offer. So bottom line is, any insurance, quote-unquote, product offered by a credit card company, rip it up and throw it away when they try to make you sign on the dotted line. And yes, you don't pay anything if you don't carry a balance. But, of course, it doesn't take long for those fees to jump. So they are one of the highest cost, quote, insurance products on the market, and they're simply not justifiable. The loyalty reward programs, just keep in mind, keep it simple, because they've created tricks to reduce the value of those awards. I always recommend get the 1% cash back. You know what to do with your money better than playing all these games of what the value is of some product that they're going to send you, and then you've got all these shipping and handling charges associated with it.
Keith, thanks a lot, and good luck to you. Mike in Clintonville. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had two comments. One, I thought there was some legislation a while back that I had heard of where when you receive your monthly statement, they would disclose to you if you made your minimum payment, they would take you X amount of months to pay off your balance. And the second comment or suggestion, I've done quite a bit of research myself, you know, just as a consumer, as what credit card I should carry. And I've always found my best sources to be with a local credit union. They give me the longest grace period. I can make my payment right at the credit union, eliminating the mail time. You know, everything seems to make more sense with their product versus the national bank. And I was just wondering what you had to think about that and what credit card companies you thought were good ones. I'll take my answer off the air.
Mike, you make a really good point. In fact, I was involved in the minimum payment litigation. In fact, that was originally one of the compromise amendments to the bankruptcy law, which has suddenly disappeared once the banks got what they wanted. No minimum payments, which was actually passed by the state of California in 2002, again was challenged legally by the American Banking Association, and ultimately their argument was that only Congress could dictate these terms of simply consumer information on your statement. So no, there is no requirement, and no state currently has forced the credit card industry to require to disclose that information of how long it would take to pay your outstanding balance based on a minimum payment.
Because we would be shocked at how long it would take.
Well, because absolutely, mm-hmm. and it would certainly lead to some people trying to accelerate their minimum monthly payments to pay it off, and it would hurt their profitability. But Mike makes a really good point about credit unions, and it's one of the reasons that we've seen such an intensified attack against credit unions over the last few years. And that is, again, their customer service. They have lower interest rate fees. They have lower penalty fees. They will work with you in times of difficulty. When in doubt, I would always go with a credit union over a major credit card issuing bank.
Yeah, but you're not necessarily in the business of endorsing specific credit cards that are good over those that are bad.
Well, mm-hmm. the problem is that the contract that you signed today can be unilaterally changed by the bank tomorrow. Yeah. So before the print has actually dried, the contract you thought you have has been changed.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Mike. Judy in Reedstown is with us now. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I have a credit card similar to the caller two places back where they have all sorts of gifts and credit protection. However, my credit card has a new way to make extra money. They sent me a letter recently that says that if you are late in paying, you not only get a late fee and charges, but your charges are assessed from the day you bought each of the items that you're paying your credit card on that month.
So no grace period.
I pay my off every month, but the day that I don't run in from the mailbox and miss, I'm going to be nailed from the moment I bought everything.
And again, you know, this is just another way where the banks have looked at how much money are they making. They have record profits. How can we make a little bit more money? And in this case, again, even when you play by their rules, paying off the credit card as soon as you can, not having an outstanding balance, now they've created this new situation where you're going to pay and incur finance charges from the date of the purchase. Again, as long as Congress permits them to pursue these policies, they will be considered legal, and we really need to demand our members of Congress to force the industry to have more responsible policies.
Yeah, thanks, Judy. I thought I saw an example of another credit card practice that really hurt some consumer yesterday on the news. I know what it was. He had a credit card that the interest rate on his credit card jumped, you know, like, I don't know, 20 points to, you know, 37% interest or something. And it turned out it had nothing to do with him being late on that credit card or any problems with that credit card, but being late somewhere else, like late on a car payment.
Exactly. Mm. I mean, the United States is the only country that has essentially deregulated its financial services industry and encouraged people to take on more debt and tightened its bankruptcy laws. And so when we start looking at these other examples, what you see is the lack of consumer privacy that's emerged today. There's no other country in the world where your particular lender has the right to see every single financial relationship you have with any other bank. So it's no surprise that they can come up with something that's occurred in your payment history that they claim justifies their decision mm-hmm. to raise your interest rate. But they never tell you what would be the criteria of good payment history that would lower your interest rate, nor will they unilaterally lower your interest rate. You would have to demand it. Again, this is an industry that's just completely out of control.
Yeah. Karen in Port Washington. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm in sales, and I had a customer who gave me a credit card number for an order that she placed with me, and then she called me a couple days later and said, I gave you the wrong number. The limit is not high enough on that card, so here's a different card. My company had already run the charge. The credit card company allowed that charge to go through. It took her card from, you know, a 0% interest card to like a 16 or 18% interest card, which she was now going to be paying on like a, you know, a quite a hefty balance that she had. And I just feel like maybe the credit card companies need a copy of the dictionary, because to me, limit is a limit. And to just sort of decide that they're going to allow you to go over your limit, which is going to give you a, you know, $29, $39 over the limit fee plus jeopardize your interest rate, it's criminal. And I just think, you know, to me, a credit limit should be a credit limit. And just would like to hear some comments on that.
Yeah.
You know, you make such a good point. It's the same concern that I have with debit cards, where supposedly you're using a debit card and you're never going to go beyond the money that's in your account, and then they miraculously come up with an overdraft protection fee program, which is as a courtesy to their customers. So all of a sudden I see people with these really high interest rates and they're on their debit cards, and who would have thought that was possible? And again, the example that you give is simply just another way where the banks have set a boundary that says, oh, you exceeded your limit, and so now you're going to have to pay all these fees. You should have known better, but as a courtesy to you, we let that charge go through because it's the most profitable product that we offer to you as a consumer.
Thank you, Karen. John, I'm not sure where you're from. Wyota?
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
You have a lot of programs like this on, like the payday loan things and like that. And I think we're looking at the wrong end here. I think we're looking at, we need to look at the consumer. The consumer needs to look in the mirror, for one thing, and say, whose fault is this in the first place? Nobody held a gun to this guy's head that owed $3,200 and said, you need to sign up for this credit card, and you need to rack up $3,200 on this credit card. He did it, and he went over limit, and whose fault is that? I know a couple weeks ago you had the payday loan thing on, and a woman called in and said about how, you know, she just hated these places, and, you know, I don't have any love for these places either, but she said she overspent at Christmas. And, you know, whose fault is that, for crying out loud, in the first place? It's their fault. And we're always looking for a way out, a scapegoat,
I'm glad you called, John. Robert Manning, the, you know, consumer has some blame in all this. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the key here is that consumers have been encouraged to take on more debt than they can possibly repay. That the industry now is found that its best customer is somebody who cannot repay their debt, and as a result of that, they have marketed specifically towards this 20-30% of the population that cannot possibly repay their debts. So what we have is a problem of both sides spinning out of control. There's no financial literacy and education programs like there used to be in the public school system, and the banks are taking and preying upon this lack of knowledge in terms of offering increasingly complex products that even I can't figure out some of the terms of these contracts. So to say that the average consumer understands their contract, I think, is a little bit duplicitous by the industry to say that. And then ultimately, we need to have fair and responsible lending, that if banks can charge 1,000% APR in terms of one suit I'm involved with, it's a $250 limit on your credit card, but you get charged $180 before you even use the card. And, of course, one purchase could simply trigger a late and over limit fee, and then some very abusive collection practices. So consumers need to be very clearly explained what are the terms of their contract, and if they don't understand it, we need to have an education program that makes it clear that they understand what the terms are, because the banks are simply price gouging consumers by controlling Congress, that there's no longer a state usury law anymore, and that they can charge fees without any concern about what the consequences are to the consumer. And if we've gotten to the point now where the most financially distressed members of our society are in a dog-eat-dog world, that there's no other place for them to go, then I think we really have to take a step about where the future of our society is headed.
John, thank you for calling. Connie in Madison is with us now. Hi, Connie.
Hi. In a fractured health insurance situation where 46.6 million Americans don't have or can't afford health insurance, can't get it, and where copayments and other cost-shifting methods of getting more and more of the cost burden to go to consumers is occurring across all employers where there is health insurance, credit cards are that which people are turning to take up that slack. And since we are, in fact, a financially illiterate nation, thinking in terms of just 1 month at a time instead of the trajectory of all that life can offer over a longer period of time, you see large amounts of interest, late fees, penalties, mm-hmm. on something that was anything but voluntary, that is, necessary medical treatment. And once you have such a record, if you have a chronic illness or some sort of really devastating illness, at that point, even if you wanted to buy health insurance, you would be refused.
Yeah. Robert Manning?
Well, I think the key here is that we don't save for the proverbial rainy day any longer, that we've been seduced, that as long as we make our minimum payments, we can afford our current debt capacity and our debt situation. And it's the unexpected crisis like a medical or health or job-related incident that pushes people over the edge who thought that they were in solid financial ground. And the credit card industry and the banking system knows exactly what percentage of people are going to be in that situation, and they know that even if they never repay their bills and go into bankruptcy, they're going to recover two or three times the principal anyway, and it's profitable. I just want to make the point right now that with the end of the housing boom, that I estimated between $300 to $350 billion in credit card debt has been repaid through home equity loans over the last 5 years. And that people that are having a hard time making their mortgage payments, it's because their mortgage payments include so many other consumer debts that have been refinanced. And with these new variable rate mortgages that are occurring, we're going to see, as we've shown in our movie, when the bubble does burst, a degree of financial distress that's going to reverberate throughout the American economy. And it's just shocking to see the lack of preparedness that our national leadership is now presenting to the average American about what the consequences now are of that indiscriminate use of consumer credit. I mean, we are a country now that's dependent upon communist China simply to offer us the money to borrow so that we can maintain our lifestyle, and it's unsustainable. And the credit card industry is basically the originator of this large global system now, which makes money on people in debt.
Well, we'll have to have you back to talk more about the issues in the documentary. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Robert Manning, author of Credit Card Nation, featured in the new documentary, In Debt We Trust, America Before the Bubble Bursts. Thanks to Leo Duran and Cale Plowman for producing this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.